Hello, Laura. How are you going?
Hello. That seems so weird after such a long time of not podcasting. It's good to be back. And I just want to say hello and welcome to anyone who's tuning in. It's actually been really heartwarming to have so many people still remembering our podcast and sending messages and hoping that we'll make a return. And here we are, we're back. How about you? Does it feel a bit funny?
Yeah, like I'm super excited. I couldn't believe the amount of dust that had accumulated on our microphones, our sound desk. When I set everything up and I turned it on, I was like, I hope this still works.
It's so funny because I often say we're thinking about dusting off the podcast mics as a turn of phrase, but it literally was a case of dusting off the podcast mics and the recording equipment. And when I came in yesterday, you had set up our lounge room area in our new studio as a little podcasting setup. And I noticed straight away that the machine was all shiny and had been dusted off. So here we are. So we're in a totally different location, which is actually the topic for today. So when I did go out on my stories and sort of tease this idea of a podcast return, I asked for suggestions and what people would like to hear about. And the most popular topic by far was that people wanted to find out what we've been up to and learn more or hear more about our new studio space. So the topic today is there such a thing as a perfect studio? And I thought this would be a great opportunity to chat a bit about our studio journey because it has been an up and down roller coaster with many challenges but highs as well, and run through what has led us to our current situation, which was super exciting but also scary, where we took the plunge and purchased a property to turn into a dedicated studio, office, creative space, recording spot for our podcast, the full works. So that's the topic today. I've got quite a few questions that have come through. Yeah, I'm just super happy to be back. So where should we start with this story?
I think we should just start with like where you came from to where you are now. Every time I tell somebody about, you know, your story, I always remember that I don't even know if I could find that photograph. I took this photograph of an easel in our kitchen. It was the tiled floor of the house in Hallett Cove and the easel and the table. And it was just this mess in our dining area. And now I'm sitting here in a house that we've repurposed into an art studio. Like, I have to pinch myself regularly.
It still doesn't really seem real to me when I think back to the very beginnings of my art journey. And for people who are brand new here listening in to this podcast, I don't think we've even introduced the podcast, which is the Laura Horn Art Podcast. So I wanted to just let people know that I started making art as a hobby and I didn't have a formal background in art. I was simply just looking for something to do in the cracks of motherhood and juggling other things in life. And art came along and I quickly fell in love with it, as many people do, and accumulated supplies and things like that. But I was just working at a kitchen table, a dining table, boxes, baskets, stuff everywhere. It was pretty chaotic at the beginning, to be honest. There was a lot of stuff that seemed to infiltrate the house, and I know that you would come in and the kitchen sink would be full of paintbrushes. There'd be mysterious bits of paint on light switches, splashes of paint on walls in the lounge room, the carpet. So I really do relate to people who have expressed some of the challenges of having an art studio at home and carving out space for art. And it's one of the things that led me to shifting into different types of art to see what would work better. So I started off painting using acrylic and working on canvases. So what you're describing is a messy scene that I have in my mind of big canvases leaning against walls, an easel in the middle of our main living dining space.
We got this cabinet built that matched the kitchen. In the middle of this cabinet, it was like a wall-to-wall cabinet, and in the middle of it was where the TV was. And your easel was like right in front of that TV. So you couldn't even watch the TV. The whole room was like, you just took over the entire room. We couldn't eat our dinner. We couldn't watch TV. We couldn't hang out. Like
it was quite funny because I had another easel in our dining room area that people would see as soon as they walked in the house. So our house didn't even look like a normal home at that point. And it's funny because now our home is actually quite a separate place to my art. I don't even have a huge amount of art at home or art supplies. I've brought everything over here, and some of our walls at home are quite blank now because I don't even have enough art to fill both spaces. So it's been a really big change, but I am enjoying the separation immensely. And I know that it's a real privilege to be able to have a separate art space, and it is a big step in anyone's art career. And I made heaps and heaps of art from home. Like, it hasn't really impacted how prolific I am in making art, because I do think that the amount of art you make is a mindset thing more than any studio space, materials, supplies. It really is about your desire and your discipline.
When we moved from the house to our first studio, the rented space, from that moment on, you've made less art since moving out of your home studio. Because when we were in the home studio, you were doing commissions, you had a gallery, we were doing markets, we were just pumping out art, and we were scanning, printing, making cards, selling. Like, we were flat out, from the house.
Absolutely. We were in the thick of carving out some kind of art business and figuring out how to bring in an income stream and not knowing quite what that would look like. So we were trying all sorts of different avenues. Since then, we have gone on to focus more on creating classes, and we've now been doing YouTube videos, podcasting. So our workflow has changed quite a bit. So when I think about it, the studio has not made me make more art. I guess that's the point that I wanted to make. The studio environment adds all these different kinds of perks to making art. So I will say that I feel like my enjoyment of the process has increased in my new studio because I am able to do things that I wasn't easily able to do in our other setups. So one of the questions that came through from my Instagram story was to run through the spaces that we've had and talk about them and some of the benefits and some of the challenges. So we've talked about working from home, and that was the first few years of our art journey. And for me, that started as a hobby, but it was an intoxicating hobby.
Yeah, and just for anybody that's listening out there, you had really successful market stalls from the house. Not only was there art supplies stacked up all over the place, there was also market stuff stacked all over the place. The garage was full of all the stuff we used to have to set up a market stall. You would paint commissions from the house. You had an ongoing gallery from the house. And we also filmed one of our most successful courses from the house. So if anyone's listening to this going, oh, you need to have a studio to be successful, I'm telling you now, you don't at all. You can do it from your home.
That's such a good point, because we had some of our biggest wins and highs and successes working from home. We were very prolific. And in some ways, we've been chasing that ever since and trying all sorts of different other options. So one of the advantages of working from home is that it's right there in front of you. You don't have to get in a car. You don't have to pack up supplies. You know, I had a real challenge over the last year or two of having my art supplies spread out in two different places because we had a rented space and I had a studio at home. And that just created a whole lot of frustration. So when we were at home, everything was there. I found myself making art in little snippets more often, making art even when the kids had gone to bed, making art when kids were napping when they were young, making art on weekends. And the downside to it was that it was almost too much, to the point where I didn't have the boundaries that I needed in order to have the home environment that I wanted. And the reality of it was painting for too long and dinner not being on the table. There was, you know, a horrible memory of missing something important at school because I was so deep in my process that I missed something that my daughter had on. And I just felt like I went a little bit too crazy in a way. And this is often the case when you are getting off the ground, because you are, you know, you're on this wave of emotion and you are getting these little successes from whatever that might be. It could be a successful market stall. It could be completing your first commission, making prints, but you're riding this wave of discovery. And so, the downside for me was definitely work-life balance. And then we made the decision to rent a space. And part of the reason for renting a space was that we ran out of space. So things got pretty hectic at home. We even moved our children into one bedroom to share because we were printing artwork.
I just wanted to jump in there real quick before you start talking about the rented space. Like, there was progressions in the art. Like, you started big. Like, it wasn't like you started like a couple of sketchbooks on the table and then you kind of progressed. Like, I just remember coming in the door one day and it was just two easels. There was a drop sheet on the floor. There was a drop sheet on the table. And we had this massive dining table at the time and it was just packed full of stuff. Jam jars in the sink. I don't know whether this is lucky for you. I don't even know if this is the right word to say, but I was like stoked for you. I was like, this is great. I didn't go, what's going on? I was like, this is awesome. But then we moved. So you moved from there. Then you took over a part of the living room. So you had a part of the living room where you had your computer stuff. And then you had all of the living room. And then we shifted the kids into the same bedroom. And then that, so we had like 50% of the house was devoted to your art. And then we just converted the garage into a studio. So then you had kind of like 25% of the house and 100% of the garage. Then we moved into the hired studio. So it was, and this is what I like about your art journey, is that there was no will I, won't I. It was like, let's go. And you just went and it was awesome.
Yeah, it was almost like something was pushing me along that I didn't even understand myself. But it's funny you mentioning all of that because I just thought it was really normal at the time.
It wasn't.
But now that you say it, I try and imagine if it had been the opposite and you had been really into something, bikes or something. And the whole house was just full of all that kind of stuff, because it really was, it just infiltrated everything. So you definitely need to have a supportive family, or perhaps not start quite as big as I did.
But in saying that, like, when we first met and you came to Ireland, Like, I remember you trying, you joined a mixed netball team to try and make friends. I'd seen you struggle in another country. Like, I'd seen you struggle to be happy. And then we moved back to Australia and still, like, you were still playing netball, like you'd play netball with your friends or whatever, but you never really had anything for you. I had lots of stuff going on. I still do today. But you never really had anything. And then when I came in and the house was just like, I don't know, it was like something from Art Attack on TV, you know, the kids show. It was like the set of Art Attack. And I was like, this is awesome. Like, it was awesome. I loved it.
I think you fueled it as well. Admittedly, you encouraged me on every next step. So you probably went out and bought me easels. You converted the garage. Like, you were very much a part of this adventure with me, although it was my passion, but you were there setting up market stalls. You were riding this wave as well. So that was that part of the journey. And then we realized that it was getting challenging and we would probably need to give our children individual bedrooms again and maybe carve out some semblance of a normal home. So we began to look for space. In Australia, finding space for a studio is very difficult. We don't have a lot of options. Rental spaces, like commercial spaces, are very expensive, like shops and things like that. And we really struggled to find somewhere that was in our budget. And then we kept an eye, or I was mainly keeping an eye on realestate.com, the commercial side of it, looking for space. And this little office shop front in a suburb that I would say is not a particularly desirable area.
It's in a rough part of town, yeah.
That's my nice way of saying it. It's in a rough area. But it was actually quite close to where we lived at that time. So at that time, it was only about 15 minutes drive. It was freshly painted. It had a sink. It was perfect for an art space.
It had really, really fast internet speeds, and it was quiet during the day for podcasting and that kind of stuff and filming.
Yeah. So it was quite officey in a way, and it was in a little set of offices, more so offices than shops. There wasn't a lot of traffic, like people coming. There wasn't any kind of food places or anything like that. So it was reasonably quiet and tucked away, and it was cheap. So to give people who are in Australia, I guess, a perspective of how much it was, it's something like $600-$700 a month.
It was $660 a month, and it would go up 10% a year or something like that.
And it was quite a big space. Like, we had room to have our office, so both of us had our computer set up and desk, a little podcasting lounge, and a painting area. Now, the painting area wasn't huge, and we did end up mainly using it for filming classes, so it became more of a filming area than my actual studio, which is what led me to the situation where I had two spaces. So I set up a home studio in a loft area above our lounge room so that I could have an area just to kind of get a bit messy and play. But that particular space was very exposed. So if someone was watching TV downstairs, it was noisy. It was also in this loft area, and in Australia, heat rises. So in the summer, it was boiling. We installed air conditioning, which did help.
Everywhere, heat rises, not just in Australia.
Okay, well, in Australia we have extreme...
It was really hot.
Summer heat is what I mean. So heating and cooling was a real problem, because then in winter we put our fire on, and that was even worse. Like, the heat would rise from our fire, which is in the lounge room below, and then I'd have a situation where I have the fire on downstairs and the air conditioner on upstairs. So that was a real, real challenge. And because we had both of these spaces mainly set up for small work, so watercolor work, sketchbook work. My art changed quite a bit due to the circumstances. And sometimes we do need to do that. We do have to think about what's realistic. And so I focused mostly on watercolor art and sketchbook art over the past couple of years, but that ended up having a positive impact on our art business because so many people are in the same boat and struggling to find space, working at a kitchen table, wanting to limit down the supplies, not wanting the chaos that we had in the first place where I set up art, where your whole home becomes an art attack. So I modified things, and that actually was beneficial. We created classes around this kind of easily accessible sketchbook, watercolor, mark making art, and I love that kind of art. So that worked well in that sense.
There was one realization as well, and I noticed this. You didn't like coming down to the studio to do your own work. You would come down to film or do business and then you would leave. And it was rare where you'd say, oh, I'm just going to stick around and, you know, do some art. If you have an amazing studio, like we're talking about, does the perfect studio exist? It can only be perfect if you love painting in it. It doesn't matter what it has, whether it has state-of-the-art racks, lots of natural light, big space. But if you don't love the space, if you don't want to go there and paint, you're not going to. Do you know what I mean? Like in Hallett Cove, that was the perfect painting space for you at that time.
Yeah, especially when we converted the garage, which is a great option because it provides that separation of space. So you're not painting in your lounge room, but it had that proximity and ease of getting there. And I found with the rented space that we had, especially when we moved, so we moved and then we were half an hour away from it. Half an hour was a long time to me. And often I would think to myself, I'd rather stay at home and paint at home. And I'd feel a lot more homey at home because the rented space, as I said before, it was a little bit officey. It was a little bit sterile in a way to me. And even though we'd set up a designated art area, it did feel like a set more than a studio. And there's a really big difference between a set and a studio where you have all the things that you love and you have different areas and you can leave mess out. And it's just a different feeling. So that didn't work so well for me in my personal art practice. It worked well for filming classes, filming podcasts. We really upped our game as far as what we were creating as an online art education business. Worked really well from that perspective. But that's when the amount of art that I was making personally did start to decline, and I started to feel frustrations around my art practice at that point. And that's when I started to dream about a space where we could bring everything together, but that I would have almost like the feeling that I had in our first example when at home in Hallett Cove, but separate to home, but close to home. So, and homely. I wanted it to feel like a home. And we almost made a mistake. We almost bought a property. Well, we didn't actually almost buy a property, but we considered buying properties that were further away from where we live because they might have been really beautiful. So a really beautiful studio atmosphere, location, lovely drive, all the sorts of things that might look great on Instagram. But we almost made that mistake of having somewhere that wasn't close. And there was a really good chance that if it had been a 30-minute drive, I wouldn't have gone.
When you asked me to come to look at the studio where we are now, and when I came to see it for the first time, I came and walked through it. And I just remember walking away going, I'd never live there. That's not a house I want to live in. There's too much work. It's too small. It only has one bathroom. And you're like, do you want to come and look at the studio again, like the this property again? And in my head, I was saying, there's no point in going back. I don't see the benefit of it. And then I had this kind of mind shift where I went, hang on a second, you're not going to live here. This is a studio. And then when I came again, I was like, this is perfect. Like, I had a complete switch. It went from being something I wouldn't spend any money on to saying, look, we should put in this offer, because if we lose this, we'll be kicking ourselves. When you were talking about, we were looking at those properties 30 minutes away, is because in our heads, we were like, can we live here? Is it a good investment? That kind of thing. Whereas with this studio, it was like, no, this is absolutely perfect for what we need.
So just to clarify on that, we were looking at a property that we could use as a studio, but would also be a good investment in the long term that potentially we could live in down the track if we were going to downsize, or one of our kids perhaps could live in. So we were sort of looking at it from different angles rather than just exclusively as a studio. But then I started to think about the studio side of things more than those other aspects and really hone in on what would make a good studio. And I realized that proximity to home was really big for me. So this studio is 5 minutes from our home. It is walking distance from where our son goes to school. The bus stop for where our daughter goes to high school is also just down the road. So both kids have come here quite a bit. And that's really lovely, because one of the things I struggled with when our studio was 30 minutes away was just not being close to home, not being accessible to the kids. And this feels like a really good balance of that, especially as our children are getting older, so they can be at home on their own. The property itself is essentially a two-bedroom 50s cottage with a whole lot of sheds, a granny flat out the back, a beautiful cottage garden. It's on a quite big, substantial block. The garden itself is magnificent, but quickly became overwhelming. We actually just had some gardeners through this morning. People have asked about the garden, and I just want to be totally honest and say that I thought I could handle it and I can't. And we have had to look at getting someone in to help keep the garden looking as beautiful as the previous owner had it. So, you know, that was something that we probably didn't factor in when we initially decided on purchasing this property, but there are always going to be little extra things that crop up, which could be a whole podcast episode in itself, realizing that talking about this is really quite a journey and there's a lot that you can dig in with. But one of the questions was like, how did we know that we were ready to make that significant decision and investment in a separate external studio space? We quickly realized that this place was perfect.
Yeah.
Now, it's interesting that the title of this podcast is Does a Perfect Studio Exist? And no, it doesn't. But this was as close to perfect as what we could imagine. And we knew that we needed to just have a crack at securing it. And one of the things that worked in our favor with this property was that, as far as it being a home, it was imperfect in many ways. So this is a wonky cottage. In fact, I was trying to take an Instagram story yesterday to show the podcast setup, and it was driving me insane because the floor was like, looked so out of whack with the windows. And you've been finding that with filming, like, it's a crooked house. It's a wonky, crooked house. It's a house that potentially a developer would knock down and build on. So people who came to look at it, they had some reservations around some of the issues with the house. We got it all checked out and we were told, look, if this is what you're using it for, it's going to be fine. It's going to be great. Like, so we were able to use that to our advantage in the whole purchasing process. So because the property was a little bit, what would you call it, a little bit...
Rundown.
Rundown, I guess. It was beautifully maintained, but rundown in certain ways. And because of that, we did end up getting the property at a price that was really lower than what we had initially been looking at. So as far as knowing that the timing was right, it was an idea that had been in our heads for probably a couple of years, ever since we moved house and we'd been 30 minutes away from our other studio, and knowing that it was impacting on my art practice, not having a space that I felt was really working. I guess because I had all those heating and cooling issues, I was getting a bit frustrated, especially thinking this is my job. I've been doing this for a number of years and somehow I've ended up in a situation where I'm really struggling to make art. So we knew that we wanted to make a change, but in order to make this next step up, we really needed to look at our art business and know that we had a good, profitable business model, have faith in our processes, what we do each year. And so we sort of worked on that over the last few years. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that we knew that we had a consistent income, and we knew that we had various different income streams and levers that we can pull on, and we tested them out over a number of years. So we weren't just going into this maybe a bit of optimism after one good year. We'd actually ridden out sort of the high of COVID, and I say the high of COVID in the sense that COVID was a great time for many artists. Many artists sold a lot of work and sold a lot of art classes, and we were in that camp. And then there was a drop off, and we'd figured out strategies and systems in our business to ensure that we could maintain a good business and a good healthy profit. So that's the honest truth of it, is that we took our time to make sure that this next step was viable for us, and it was a jump up from the previous studio, but it wasn't something that we did straight from home. So there were steps. You know, we went from working from home to working at this quite affordable studio to then having this bigger investment and dedicated art space. But we had been working together as a couple, running an art business, making a good profit for a number of years, and we knew that we had the capacity to continue doing that, and that it would be improved by having this space. So as soon as we came and looked at the space, we knew that we would create enormous efficiencies in our creative process by having both of our offices right next to each other, you having a full photography, videography set up, everything really well organized. You've got built this brilliant cabinet across the back of your office, using IKEA cabinets, but it's the full wall length so that you can sort all your gear and stuff like that. So we have created a much better process where if we are filming something, or if I'm creating a piece of art, you can come in and record that or take photographs of that and then go back into your office and edit it and deliver it to me. And that didn't used to be the case.
If you wanted to paint big, we'd have to restructure the entire set. And then if we went small, we'd have to build our set again. But in the studio here, like we have a tutorial set. We have a kind of like a YouTube set, and we have a painting big set. You have your office and you have your own studio space where you paint. That's where you paint. And it's great because you disappear in there. I think it's almost like what you always wanted. You know, this big room, big sink, your own toilet. You just play your music and you disappear. And you can go from your table, your small stuff, or over to your easel, to your big stuff. And I've noticed since we've moved in here, you're back, not fully, but you're back to your old style of painting, where you would walk by a painting that's hanging on the wall that's not finished. And then, because I remember coming home to Halle Cove when we were living there, when we had the home studio, and I'd walk in and there'd be a painting on the wall. And I'd be like, oh, that's nice. And then the next day I'd come in and it'd be gone. And then it'd be in your studio painting on it. And I'm noticing that now in this studio, where I'll walk by and there'll be a painting missing. Like, there's a painting missing there because it's in your studio next to the easel, ready to be painted on. You're constantly doing stuff. You're going from small to large, acrylic to watercolor, collage. You're out in your garden. You're constantly, yeah, it's almost like you're back.
Yeah, because sometimes we get caught up in thinking that the perfect studio is the place with perfect lighting. You know, it's huge. We can fit, you know, 10 canvases on easels or whatever is your fantasy around a studio. But the perfect studio really is the place that you want to be. And for me, that probably isn't a big warehouse with, you know, 10 easels. And like, I just know myself. I know myself well enough to know that the perfect studio for me is one that has a comfy chair, has a nice rug in it. People are asking me constantly about this rug, by the way. I have a rug that was left by the previous owners. It's a Killam rug, I think is what it's called. And it is almost threadbare. It looks really great on camera.
That rug cannot even be moved.
And so people keep on asking me, like, how on earth are you painting with this rug? And I'm and you can't move it because it will just fall apart.
It'll
like
disintegrate.
It's starting to fall apart at the edges and it's really old. And the previous owner said, oh, look, we're just going to throw this out. Do you want it? And I was like, that would be perfect for a painting rug. And it's a lovely because it creates a homey feeling, but it's also comfy, you know, when you're walking on the floors. And I know that an art studio for me is always going to have things like plants. It's going to have artwork up on the walls. It's going to have, you know, journals and maybe some inspirational books, magazines. I mean, I'd love if there was a cat or a dog, but we don't have that. Maybe in the future, you know, but it's pretty close to that feeling for me. When I get in there, I just feel so happy. It feels so comfortable. It's a great layout. It is a granny flat. I don't have the exact measurements of it. It's bigger than any studio I've had before, but it's not enormous. It has this great sink, and I say great because we were originally going to pull it out because it takes up the main wall space. But I have found that since having the sink there, I clean up way more because the sink is just right behind. In fact, I've got into a really good habit of cleaning up each day. Now, I don't know if this will last. I've only been really actively using my studio for probably the last 3 or 4 months, but it certainly has helped to have that practice. Although having said that, I did develop a practice in the last couple of years of cleaning my brushes and often just like filling up a water container and laying stuff out ready for me the next day. I've found that particularly good with sketchbook work and watercolor work to make it inviting and to bring a sense of closure into my day. And it's interesting because we had a whole range of questions come through and we've barely touched on this topic, and I know we've been talking a while and I know you're looking at me saying this is not a 30-minute episode, Laura, but we had all these questions around tidying up and cleaning. It was really interesting.
When I look at those questions, you know, how do you keep it tidy? I think to myself, you don't. Now, I know it's your home and I know it's your kitchen table, but if you're painting a piece and you're looking at the clock and it's like, oh God, the kids are getting home soon, or keep painting. Like, keep painting till the last moment you can paint. And then when the kids come through the door or your husband comes through the door and you know you cannot paint anymore, then tidy up.
Yeah.
Don't wait.
I mean, I do that and then I end up getting home late because I end up painting right up until 5:30 p.m. and then I tidy up and then it's like 6 or whatever. But I do tend to wash my brushes, lay them out to dry, put my paints away. There's a lot of questions around how do you have everything accessible but not have too much visual.
Yeah, that's one of the questions. One of the questions was finding a balance between seeing what materials you have versus your storage and then your visual space, you know. And I remember when we walked in, so we had none of that in the old studio. Everything was in the visual space, everything. It was like an open plan type thing. Where you painted, you could see my computer. If you sat in the little podcasting lounge that we had, you could see the set, and like, it was just one room. We didn't have any separation. So if there was any materials, they were just leaning up against the wall. There was no real storage. We did have a storage facility offsite, a you store it type thing. Whatever went into that storage unit disappeared, never came back. So any pieces of art that were being worked on, all that kind of stuff was kind of in that space. But when we came here to that granny flat, which we've converted into Laura's studio, it has all these cool little nooks and crannies and that you can store stuff in. Believe it or not, and I know there's no such thing as the perfect studio, but it has the perfect balance of those three things, the materials, your storage space, and then your visual space.
So I have put things like canvases and substrates out of the way because we do have these great sort of nooks and crannies where I can get things like that out of my sight. But when it comes to the art supplies, I do have most things pretty accessible because I utilize a lot of trolleys, boxes, trays, and things like that that I have out. But when I was bringing everything over from our rented space and my loft area at home, I did take quite a bit of time to think about where I was going to put things and which things would make the most sense to put behind closed doors. And this is something that's really helpful to do, is just to consider all of the things that you use and how often do you use them. So things like varnishes, my mask and that I use when I'm using spray varnish, some of my acrylic painting tools, my bigger brushes, I don't use as much. So they are in a cabinet behind me. And then I have area underneath the sink as well. And I've got some older pieces that I've worked on, collage papers and things like that that I'm not using all the time under there. So I might only reach for something under there once a month, whereas the things that are on my table and on my trolley, I use a lot. So I have all my paints out, easily accessible, my watercolor paints, my brushes. I'm also relatively minimalistic, I would say, in relation to art supplies. When I think about the approach I take with art supplies compared to many artists, I feel like there are many art supplies out there that are quite similar. So you don't necessarily need to have Daniel Smith watercolors, Schmincke watercolors, every brand of watercolors. Sometimes it pays to actually be a little bit restrictive in a way in relation to your suppliers because it gives you headspace and moving space with your art, and it also forces you to be more creative in the way that you do things. So I am not someone who has tons and tons and tons of paint and brushes. I have I have more now than I did, but I don't have so much stuff that it becomes overwhelming.
Well, you always had, no matter where your studio space was, so whether it was at home, the loft, or here, you had three different tables. You had a table that you worked on, and then there was a table on the back where you had the main guts of your supplies. And then you had like trolleys dotted around the place. You had a shelving unit, and then you had another table with a computer on it. So you were kind of like, you always separated, even if it was in the one room, everything was separated. Like what you were working on that week would be confined to one tabletop.
Yeah, I have zones. So I have my working table where I do a lot of sketchbook and watercolor stuff, and that's where I have those supplies. And then the other side of the studio, I have my easel and my acrylic painting stuff, which works really well because the big sink is behind it. And one thing that I considered was having another table or bringing in another easel. But once I started working, and this is really important if you are moving into a new space, not to jump into decision making, because we would have made some mistakes. One, we would have pulled out the sink, which I now love. Mm-hmm. And secondly, we would have filled up the space with more tables and more furniture than what I actually enjoy.
And that easel is a game changer.
Yes.
We'd have never got it.
So one of the reasons that we were going to pull the sink out was because I thought that I wanted the wall to hang canvases so that I could work directly on the wall with larger canvases. But as it turns out, I love working on an H-frame easel because you can adjust it, you can get the perfect height, the perfect angle, you can have it flat or vertical. You can move it around based on where the light is best. It's a real game changer for me and actually makes me really happy to sit down and paint. And sometimes I sit on the stool and I do more detailed work, which would have been really hard to do on a wall. So that has really transformed the way that I work. And the other thing I've realized, and I knew this, but I've realized it more, is that I love to have room to step back, to take a canvas off the easel and put it on the floor. I bought some floor cushions recently so I could just work on the floor, lay out paintings and work that way. So what I've found is that I don't actually want to have too many tables and too much fixed furniture because I enjoy the space to move. And if you're like me and you like to put your music on and you really are, like, you're probably going to be having a bit of a dance as well as painting. You want to move around, you want to get energized, then having a bit of space is great. So I know that not everyone has that opportunity, but I just wanted to, I guess, make the point that consider how you work. Try things out before jumping in. It can be easy to think that there's these things that you need that you might not actually need. Like, you may not need all this furniture. You may not need all these paints. You may actually value space to let your creativity move around. And that's what I discovered. For me, space is important. How the space feels is important. It's not just about the supplies and the furniture. It's the whole package.
So speaking about studios, there's a segment that we've decided we're going to do on every podcast, and that's just some studio news and just, you know, where you are in the studio this week. What are you up to? What are your plans? What's going on?
I love the addition of this section because one of the things that people said when we were gathering ideas for the podcast revival was that they just wanted to hear more about the art and what I'm working on, what supplies I've been inspired by, those sorts of little things that can be nice to hear about when you're just listening to a podcast. You might be working in your studio right now making art. So as far as studio news, I'm just getting back into the studio after our summer break, Christmas, all that sort of stuff. It was a pretty hectic time of year. I have a big canvas that I would really like to finish, which is about partway through, probably about halfway through. And we actually have been recording that process and sharing it on YouTube. So if you want to see where I'm up to with it, you can head over to my YouTube channel, which is Laura Horn Art. And what I'll be doing is adding in some further layers and bringing that canvas along. And I've been incorporating jelly plate prints into the canvas. So that's a new area that I'm exploring. I've also just recently received a lovely gift from the brand Etcher, and I haven't used any of their products before. I've seen them all over the place, and they create these wonderful 100% cotton sketchbooks. And there aren't that many brands that create sketchbooks that have 100% cotton paper, and 100% cotton paper is really great if you want to work with your paint a little bit longer when you're using watercolor, when you want to layer. It's just a higher quality paper. It doesn't warp as much. So I'm really excited to try that out. They've also sent me some lovely pearlescent watercolors. And I don't have any pearlescent watercolors. So this is a case of them being a very different set or a type of watercolor to what I already have, which I love. So that has me inspired to get back into some watercolor work. When we got the studio, I was so excited to finally have space to work on acrylic canvases. I am really unsure about my acrylic process at the moment. I'm trying new things. I don't feel like I have it sorted out. Not that you ever really do, but I don't have a repeatable process yet. But I am starting to feel that hankering for watercolor, especially with it being warmer weather and just the simplicity and ease of it. So I am planning on getting back into some watercolor paintings. I know many people have been asking me when I'm going to share more watercolor work, more watercolor tutorials. And when I say watercolor, I mean watercolor combined with mixed media, which is really what I focus on. So it's usually watercolor with pens or pastels or collage or all sorts of mixed media elements. So that's going to be really fun to get back into. And I'm using these supplies that have come in as the inspiration for that. It's a good excuse to test them out and to get back into that type of work and see how that feels in the new studio. I've done a bit of it, but I have been focusing more on the easel side of the studio. So it's going to be really good to use the other side of the studio and focus on that type of work. So that's where we are going to leave the conversation today. I'm pretty sure this has ended up being a much longer podcast than we imagined. With that in mind, I just wanted to thank everyone. If you've made it this far to the end of the episode, we're excited to be back and looking forward to chatting about all sorts of other topics. And I just hope that you have a lovely week ahead. We are now releasing the podcast on Monday, so I hope you have a really creative week. And if you want to find out more about my classes or more about me, I realize that there are new people here that probably don't know too much about my background. You can head on over to laurahornart.com. And I would suggest heading over to the resources page because there's all sorts of goodies there and you can find out about our YouTube channel, blog posts, all those things. And also Laura Horn Art on Instagram because that's the other main place where you'll find me. So that's it, everybody. It's been fun to be back for our first episode after a very long break.